Okay, Proverbs chapter 4. Where we are, Proverbs chapter 4. And we are making our way here through the book of Proverbs and learning about how to do life wisely and how to make wise choices and the skill to work our way through it. We might call it the game of life, and this is kind of the instructions of how to go through it. And a lot of people just try to figure it out as they go. You know, some games you can figure out, they're not that complicated. You could probably figure out Candyland without the instruction, you know, just go. I never really liked that game. It's just like, whatever. But life is a little bit more complex, and it's a lot more helpful if you can follow the instructions along the way. And so that's what we're learning as we go through here. So we are going to begin chapter 4 tonight, and we're just going to cover the first 9 verses of the chapter. So Proverbs chapter 4, and a lot of these things kind of repeat themselves as they go. And at first, sometimes it's frustrating for me as I begin studying. I was like, well, we just talked about this. But isn't that sometimes how instruction works? You know, you hear it and you finally get it. And then you're like, I figured this thing out. And then your parents or whoever it is in your life is like, I've been telling you that for however many years. I know my parents said that. I was in college and I just figured out some things. And they're like, yeah, we've been telling you that for 20 years. Like, well, sometimes it takes that 5 millionth time, you know, for it to click. So sometimes we'll read things through here that's very similar to things that were already there, just maybe different in a little bit, but it's helpful. And sometimes it takes this round to get it. You may learn something along the way here, and you're thinking, well, how long have I heard this? But you know, it's sometimes it takes time. So some of us are more dense than others. So, all right. So Proverbs chapter 4. We'll begin reading here in verse 1. He says, "Hear ye children, the instruction of a father, and attend to no understanding. For I give you good doctrine. Forsake ye not my law. For I was my father's son, tender and only beloved in the sight of my mother. He taught me also and said unto me, Let thine heart retain my words. Keep my commandments and live. Get wisdom. Get understanding. Forget it not, neither decline from the words of my mouth. Forsake her not, and she shall preserve thee. Love her, and she shall keep thee. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore get wisdom, and with all thy getting get understanding. Exalt her, and she shall promote thee. She shall bring thee to honor when thou dost embrace her. She shall give to thine head an ornament of grace. A crown of glory shall she deliver to thee." And so we're going to call this message tonight, Your Daddy's Wisdom. Okay, Your Daddy's Wisdom. There was an advertising campaign here several years back with the Oldsmobile, and they said, this is not your father's Oldsmobile. They said, this is the new generation of Olds. And I don't know if you remember that, but I remember seeing that. It was when I was really little. I think it was back in the 80s. I remember seeing some things about that. And it just occurred to me today as I was rereading my notes. I wrote it down because I copied it off. I looked it up. It's like, what was that ad for? I remember hearing that, and I looked that up. And it just occurred to me today, the pun, this is the new generation of Olds. Like, it's old. I don't know. It takes me a while. I'm one of those dense people. It takes me a while to figure that out. But that's what they're saying. This isn't your father's Oldsmobile. This is a new thing. It's the same brand, but we've totally changed it. And now there's kind of a resurgence, the same idea. I think Buick is copying that now, where they say, you know, Buick has been just kind of, I guess in recent years, it's kind of known as like, I guess like an old person's car is what they, you know, a Buick, whatever. But now, I shouldn't say that. I'm going to make people mad. No, but now, you know, the commercials you see now have made everybody mad. But it's not anymore. Now it's not. Now it's totally different because now the commercials are like, oh, I'm in the Buick. And they're like, where? It's like, that's a Buick? I can't believe, because they're trying to revolutionize things again. And the idea is that as time changes, technology changes and things change, and cars change. If you look at cars 10 years ago or 20 or 50 years ago, I mean, the technology along the way just in a car has taught. I mean, now you almost can't wreck it if you want to. It just stops and fills your car up with airbags everywhere and everything, and it's crazy. And I was never a real car guy, not keeping, you know, if an old car drives by, I couldn't tell you what it is or anything like that. But as I grew up, my hobby, I guess I was a nerd, but it was computers, okay? And I know I'm a nerd, but I come from a long line of nerds, and so that's good. My grandpa, My grandpa was a computer nerd. Yeah. My grandpa was a computer nerd back when they filled up rooms. You know, it was like rooms full of computers. And I don't know what they did, but they were computers. And it was very successful at the time. And then my dad followed in his footsteps. My dad worked with computers, and they filled up rooms then. And I have early memories when we lived up in Tulsa, going to the State Farm corporate office, or not the corporate, the regional office up there where my dad worked, and going into the computer room. And it was a room, I mean, it was a humongous room, and there was literally electricity in the air. Like, you could feel, like, you go in and it just has a smell, and there were just rooms filled with tape, like, you know, computer tape. And y'all know what that is. I talked to teenagers about this. Colton has no idea what computer tape is. And I really didn't either. It's just, that's how they ran and stuff. And so that worked. But today is a new era, and today, I help my parents download apps on their phones and help my dad remember his password sometimes and stuff. So you know, times and technology changes. And now, isn't it funny though that now we have watches that do more than my grandpa's computer did, you know? And it's just amazing the things that happen. So a lot of things change, and so it's kind of strange if you were to look in the book of Ecclesiastes, which is one of Solomon's other books. Where Solomon, if you remember, he kind of went on a shopping spree through life, you might call it, and he just experienced everything good, bad, and the ugly, experienced it all, and that's not recommended, but he did that and just said, hey, let's just indulge in everything in life and see what it's all like. And at the end, he declared, there's nothing new under the sun. There's nothing new. And when you read that, it's like, well, wait a minute, Solomon, there's a lot of new things. There's new things coming out every day. And of course, we know that technology and a lot of those things do change, but the way we navigate life is the same. The way we get through life is exactly the same. The names have been changed to protect the innocent, but the way we go through life has changed. If you get a Monopoly game board from the 20s, or whenever it was that they came out, and you get one from 2016, they look a lot different. In fact, now you don't even have money. You have cards because kids can't count and stuff. But the game is played. The game is played the same way. I mean, it's still played, and that's exactly how the game of life is. The way we look at it, I mean, you know, the way it looks on the outside is different, and it changes along the way. But your daddy's wisdom is still good. It's still good because life is still played the same way. Your grandma's advice is still worth noting. And that's, as Solomon opens up chapter 4, he's going to take a little trip down memory lane. Now, don't worry. This isn't like your grandparents' slideshows or whatever. Do you know what slides are? Colton, have you seen slides? Okay, good job. My kids have no idea. In fact, it would probably be new technology to them. So we'll have to find some someday and show them. You know, it's one of the worst things to ever have to do to someone is make them sit through slides of stuff because it never ends and it goes on. This is not going to be a boring trip down memory lane, but Solomon is going to help us understand some very important reasons why your daddy's wisdom is important. So he begins some things here in the first few verses where he describes the home, and he kind of reinforces this idea that the home is kind of like the university of wisdom. Okay, the home is the University of Wisdom. God's first institution was the home. Now, the church is important. Jesus started the church, and of course we believe that's important. I've devoted my life to it. So of course the church is important, and Jesus started that. In the early chapters of Genesis, God instituted human government. When Noah got off the ark, they established human government, and they put some parameters there, and it's an important thing to have a government body to kind of give us some laws and some structure in our society. God established that. That's important. In our culture, we have school systems that do their part in a community to help with the education of children. And sometimes there may be a little bit too much federal government involved in that, in my opinion. I think it should be a real local thing, you know, and that's good. And it should be managed as locally as possible. But it is helpful. It is a very helpful thing. Excuse me. But the chief place for children to learn doctrine or to learn morality is in the home. That's what God designed the home for. And I find it very interesting that here, as Solomon is outlining some things, here he is, the wisest man who ever lived, And he has had a supernatural dose of wisdom from God, hasn't he? Solomon had a unique experience. Excuse me. Man, I got to quit smoking. It's kind of working its way in here. I'm recording this. I do not know anyway. So Solomon has had a supernatural dose of wisdom from God. He really has. And so God has given him, whenever he began his time as a king, God asked him, you know, whatever you ask for, I will give to you. And he asked for wisdom. So he has been given a supernatural dose of wisdom from God. But how do you suppose that Solomon thought to ask God for wisdom? Why was wisdom important to him? It definitely wasn't just all of a sudden important to him that day. He had been raised right. He'd been raised in a home where his dad was King David, who taught him. He had a mom named Bathsheba, and David and Bathsheba raised their son Solomon, and they had had their own wrong experiences. I mean, when you say David and Bathsheba, the first thing you think of probably isn't Solomon. But that was his parents, and they had had their own past, but they had learned through things, and they had trained their children to do right, and David certainly had a part in Solomon's life. And so as Solomon begins to instruct his children, here he is the wisest man who ever lived, but when he goes to instruct his children, he gives them some instruction that he received from his father. He's going to repeat some things that his dad told him. That's what he says. He says in verse 3, I was my father's son. I was in your position as a child. I knew what it was like to be a child, to be a teenager, to be at that stage of life where your brain isn't quite complete yet. Did you know that, and this is totally off topic, but did you know that as a child is developing, did you know this, Colton? When a child develops, they get to a certain point, it's usually between the ages of like 12 and 22, 24, that their brain gets completely rewired. It kind of becomes adult thing. There's been studies done. I've read these things. This is really interesting. Which means that between those ages, you're not operating with a full deck of cards, you might say. You're not operating with a complete brain because it's being reset, which makes a whole lot of sense when you think about it. You see people walking around like, this kid acts like he's got half a brain. Well, it's kind of true because he's still getting it figured out. I'm not just being silly, but that's what happens. And so it's good that the half that's operating is adult-like, but the other half is kind of disengaged while it's all being rewired, because a kid thinks totally different than an adult. And so that process is kind of like a caterpillar in a cocoon for a while. And when it comes out, wonderful. But in the meantime, it's kind of mush. And that's kind of what's going on. And so what Solomon is saying, he's talking to his kids, and he's like, listen, I was my father's son. I was in your position, and there are some very important things to understand. And during that time, it's super important for a person to be downloading as much wisdom as possible before their brain gets all firmed up and before they get into their own ruts. It's important for that to take place. And so Solomon says here in verse 1, Hear, children, listen to what I am saying. And then he kind of says, again, he says, attend to know understanding. Give attention to this. Did you know you can hear things without really listening? Do you have a spouse? You know how that works? Yeah, that happens. My wife's in the nursery right now, so I can say that. Oh, she can hear it through this, though, can't she? Oh, well. Anyway, have you ever had a conversation where the conversation has been going on for quite some time, and then you realize you don't really know what the topic is? Yeah, and you have to figure out, you know, do I say something or just kind of fake it and hope I'm not asked questions? You know, I've done both this week, and so, yes, that's good. Did you hear what I was talking? Do you hear what I... What? Yeah, and then we got chickens. No, so that's what happens. No, so Solomon is not going to let them zone out. He's saying, listen. He's like, put your screen away and listen to what I'm saying. If this was 2016, that would be here, but it's not, so it's not. So he says, listen, attend, give attention to what I'm saying. This is important. This isn't just shooting the breeze. I am giving you some very important things. As I give you good doctrine, This is important stuff, and don't forsake this. You need to hear what I have to say. And so if it's this important for a child to get this instruction from his parent, then we can already glean some things here, okay? Because we are all, every one of us in this room are at different stages of this. And we're a small group here tonight, but we are well represented in a lot of different stages of life. And so if you're here tonight and you're a grandparent, then what we're learning here is that that information, that life experience, that wisdom that you have needs to get to those grandchildren or to those people in your life. So spend time with them. And that's not hard to tell a grandparent, spend time with your grandchildren, of course, that's natural. But while that's happening, you know, offload that information, give that wisdom, pass that wisdom along. And as parents, the home is a place for that to be done. The home is a place for that doctrine and for that information to be passed on. And I'm preaching to myself tonight because sometimes our life just gets into just kind of a routine where we're just trying to stay alive and not kill each other. You know, but home is a place to be instructed. You can't just say, well, you know, I'll send them to school and they'll teach them that stuff, or I'll send them to church and they'll teach them that stuff. Well, I hope that they do. But home is the place for that to happen. And as younger folks, we need to remember that wisdom is one of those things that primarily comes from years of experience. It develops over time. So we need to glean everything we possibly can. We need to listen to those things, especially from the people that God has placed immediately over us as we're going through life. Now, we could expand this outside the home. It's not just the home. There are people in our life, every one of us has someone in our life that's older and more experienced than us that we can be receiving this information from. So if you're waiting for a Solomon experience for God to just inject wisdom into your mind, it's probably not going to happen. He's probably put some people in your life that can help you out. I was going to say some silver-haired people, but I've got a little bit, and you don't want to learn a bunch of stuff from me. So, you know, find some people that God has placed in your life and pick their brains. That's very, very important. So what do they need to know? So what is the good doctrine? What's the stuff here? He gives a couple of things. Here in verse 4, Solomon flashes back, it looks like here, to a conversation that his father had with him. See, in verse 4 he says, "He taught me also and said unto me," and this is what he said, and we're going to divide it into a couple of easy places. He says, listen, well, before we do that, he says, "Let thy heart retain my words, keep my commandments, and live." So even his dad was saying, listen to what I'm saying. That's kind of a common theme throughout here. He says, these things are very important. In fact, he says, keep my commandments and live. He doesn't just say live by these. He says, these are life. This is what you need. This is very, very important. Your very life depends on following these very important truths. And this is the important truth. There's just basically two points here. He says, in verse 5, we see that he says to get wisdom. So number one, get wisdom. But he kind of elaborates. Get wisdom, get understanding, forget it not. Neither decline from the words of my mouth. And then if we skip down to verse 7, he says, wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get understanding. So this is not, wisdom is not something that's limited to someone that has some kind of royal pedigree, like a king, or someone that at a high social level or something like that. There's been a lot of talk this election cycle, especially on the Democratic side of things, where they're claiming, you know, the rich, the top 1 or 5% or whatever it is, that they are privileged and they're given a lot of privilege. And so we don't like that. And of course, the socialist solution to that is just to even it out and give everyone an equal share. Okay, I wish it had been that way in school, where you have those that are studying hard and they get A's. You have those that party hard and they get F's. And then when you get your report card, everybody gets a C. You know, wouldn't that be nice if you could just do it that way? I don't know. It's not, because it doesn't work that way. That wouldn't really promote learning, would it? We could learn a lot from just basic common sense. But what Solomon is saying here is, listen, wisdom is within reach of everyone. It's not just something that you have to be a king to get, or you have to be privileged to get. It's not. It's very available. In fact, we heard early on that wisdom was personified, remember, as Lady Wisdom, and she's crying in the streets. She's out there to anyone who will listen. Here's common sense, if you'll just listen. And the biggest yeller of wisdom is probably It probably comes from the person who raised you, who's trying to give you information. And that's what he's saying here. Listen, you can have wisdom. Get wisdom. It's available to you. I like how Derek Kidner said this. He said, what it takes is not brains, which is a good thing for some of us, is not brains or opportunity, but a decision. Do you want it? Come and get it. That's basically a summary of this chapter. He said, listen, if you want it, then you can get it. So get it. Whatever you do, get wisdom. He says it's the principal thing there in verse whatever it is, verse 7. It's the principal thing. It means it's the starting point. It's the first principle. It's your chief priority. This is what you need to start. This isn't a secondary thing that you think, well, I'm going to get started in life and then I'll figure out if I made a right choice. No. He's saying, listen, before you even get out of school, before you even get beyond where you are right now as a child, learn to use wisdom. It's very, very important. It's freely given, but it's something that you still have to invest in. Okay? It's available to anyone, but you do have to invest in it. It will not just embed itself into your mind. Wisdom is not an app that you download onto your phone and then you've got it. And it's just there forever. And no. You have to work it into your mind. I'm reading a book right now on the organized mind. It's blowing my mind. I don't understand half of what it is, but it's just one of those things I'm reading. And it talks about how our minds are amazing. I mean, if it goes in there, it's there. Now, you may never find it, but it's there. You ever have a dream about something that you thought you'd forgot about? And like, how did I even think of that? Like, I remembered this stuff from wherever, and it's in there. Our minds are amazing, absolutely amazing. But in the book, as I've been reading this, they said it's very important to remember things. You can't just look at it and just somehow know it forever. Some people are that way, and that just drives me crazy. Okay, but for the rest of us, if you want to actually do something with it, you have to memorize it. You have to do whatever it takes. For me, I have to walk around and say it out loud. That's the only way I can really memorize things. If I walk around, say it out loud, draw pictures, I have to involve my whole self into things. So if you ever wonder why I talk with my hands and walking around and stuff like that, that's why. Because otherwise, I'd fall asleep just right up here preaching. And so I have to do that. Whatever it takes, I have to work it into my mind in order to remember that. And so when he says here to get wisdom, with all thy getting, get understanding, what he's saying is, listen, invest everything you have into getting this. It's not going to be wasted. If you can get wisdom worked into your life and develop the skill to do life and work that in so that it is part of you, then you will be effective. So get wisdom. That's point one. And then number two, he says to love wisdom. Look at verse 6. He says, forsake her not, and she shall preserve thee. Love her, and she shall keep thee. And then down in verse 8, he kind of just alternates these. So in verse 8, he says, exalt her, and she shall promote thee. She shall bring thee to honor when thou dost embrace her. So now he's speaking the teenager's language, because Colton just woke up when I talked about embracing and loving. He was like, what? What? Okay, I'm sorry, Colton. You need to invite a bunch more teenagers here. That way I can pick on them instead of you. Okay, so just work on that. Anyway, so this is a language that a young person understands. Oh, love something. Well, what is love? Love is a choice. It's a choice. Love is not just a feeling or an emotion. It is, but real love is a decision. It's a decision that you make, and you choose to devote yourself to someone, or you choose to pursue someone. It's a relationship, and it is an intentional choice. And so he uses some terms here that we kind of could connect to lady wisdom here a little bit. And he says, listen, forsake her not. Don't cheat on wisdom. Wisdom is not a summer camp girlfriend. You know what a summer camp girlfriend is? Before, like right after school ends, this is what you do. You break up with your girlfriend. That way you're free. And then you go to summer camp. And then you find your summer camp girlfriend. And you can have fun and it's all great. And then when you leave summer camp, then you can leave her and it's all over. Don't do that. Okay, I'm just saying. That's what kids do. And I was a youth pastor and there were so many times that except for me, it wasn't guys with girls. It was mostly the girls that would just show up and it would be a matter of hours before I would find my teen girls that I brought, finding some guy. It's like, really? I mean, like my wife and I would watch and say, okay, just watch. It's been 5 minutes. Okay, okay, they saw him, now just watch. And then they would be, oh, then they found their person, and, you know, and they find, oh, we're in love. Like, how do you even know this person? You're never going to see him again. But whatever. But that's what they did. And then they'd leave, and then they'd leave, and it'd be all over. Like, that's just so silly. It's so stupid. Some people treat wisdom that way. They get to a crisis point, like, okay, I really need to figure out how to do life right because I just really messed up my life. And then they get something fixed a little bit, and like, okay, I'm good, thanks. Like, well, this is a whole class. This is a whole lifelong pursuit. Oh, no, I'm good. Like, and he says, listen, don't forsake wisdom. Do not cheat on wisdom. If you want to have wisdom in your life, this needs to be a long-term relationship. Love requires cultivation, doesn't it? I mean, if you have a happy marriage, the only reason you have a happy marriage is because you've cultivated it along the way. You've pulled the weeds out along the way. You've helped to prune things along the way. It's not, you don't plant a garden by throwing seeds out into the yard and hope that it produces fruit. Now, I wish that were the case because I could handle gardening that way. My wife loves gardening, and this year she said, I want a garden. I said, well, if we're going to do a garden for my sake, it needs to work or else I'm just going to quit in my mind because my mind is a fragile thing. And so if it works, I'll like it. If it doesn't work, I'll just want to quit. So she said, okay, so we're going to do it right. So in our dining room right now, we have egg cartons filled. We have lots of egg cartons, as you can imagine. And so now the egg cartons, instead of eggs, they're filled with dirt and little plants growing out of them. Because she says, if they're growing and then we put them in there, it'll grow and it'll work. And she's cultivating things in our dining room. But anyway, it's good. And it's going to work because it's taken care of. And she's putting care into this process. And he says, listen, wisdom is a high-maintenance relationship, and it's long-term. It's something that we need to be involved with. He says, love her, or forsake her not, and she shall preserve thee. Love her, and she shall keep thee. And then he says, exalt her. Give her extra attention there in verse 8. Exalt her. If you give her the extra attention, the extra magnification that she needs, that wisdom needs, you need to focus on that. You need to almost, I mean it's almost as if you're worshiping the right principles here. You are so focused on doing life the right way that it's just consuming your attention. He uses the term embrace her. You're actually showing affection to her. Sometimes we'll hear of ladies complain about their husbands about having to share their spouse with ESPN or with, you know, the sports team or whatever it is that they're involved, you know, the Dallas Cowboys or NASCAR, whatever it is, or a hobby or something along those lines. When I was in Ohio, there was a little fad that went around where different ones of us were playing a game iPhone game, Clash of Clans or something like that. And then there was some that called themselves the widows of Clash of Clans because their husbands are playing this stupid game. And I don't play it anymore. It's just a dumb game. But why do they say those things? Why do they say, oh yeah, my husband's second wife is the Dallas Cowboys or whatever it is. Why do they say that? Because they're showing, they're giving time and affection, maybe even money and devotion and things to those hobbies. And, you know, I mean, a hobby under control, I don't have a problem with that. But the point here is that wisdom should be almost an obsession, like you would have over someone that you were in love with. And it's very, very important. And what David was trying to pound into Solomon's mind is that he needed to develop a passionate relationship with God's ways, the ways of God. That's what wisdom is. Develop a passionate relationship with that. And if he would, then it's not just like a hobby that you enjoy and it doesn't do anything for you. Wisdom gives back. Look at what he says in verse 6. He says, forsake her not, and she shall preserve thee. You're given protection. Well, what are you protected from? Well, watch the way of the fool, where they just run into sin, and they end up falling right into the pits of sin that they're just jumping into, and there's consequences in that. I mean, every sin has a consequence. We're trying to raise our kids and help them understand that, help them understand that when you sin, there's always a punishment. I mean, right now it may be in the form of a whipping or something like that, but God always requires a punishment. And so we're trying to help them understand that. And sin always has a punishment. Well, you know what? If you follow the ways of wisdom, then you're protected from that because you don't need a punishment if you haven't sinned. And so when we follow the ways of wisdom, we're protected from all of the calamities that fall on the fool. Wisdom in verse 8, he says, exalt her, she shall promote thee. There are promotions with wisdom, and not just the kind with dollar signs, because the dollar signs will eventually run out. The money eventually runs out, but the good name will carry on. There's a lot of folks that have a good name that when the particular job that they're involved with, you know, just kind of washes out or whatever may happen, their good name is solid, and it's actually worth more than great riches. We'll read that later. And also in verse 9, it says here that she shall give to thine head an ornament of grace, a crown of glory shall she deliver to thee. There's the idea here of being crowned as a victor, as having earned victory through battle. It's a veteran of life. A person who honors wisdom, who loves wisdom, and is devoted to the ways of God, they will do life well, and they will be looked to as a veteran through life. These are the lessons that Solomon has proven in his life. His daddy told him this, David told him this, but he has proven it over a lifetime of experience. But what is awesome is that Solomon here is eager to pass this along, to pass this wisdom, this experience along to those not of a great number of years, but those of little years. And he's able to actually pass that on to them. Realize what is being offered here. All those years of experience, all those lessons learned can be inserted into the tender minds of those that are just starting out without having to learn all of those things. So we all have a critical role to play. Those of the older generation that have those that they are influencing, very simple instruction. Speak. Speak. Speak wisdom. Did somebody bark? I thought I heard somebody bark when I said that. You have something to say. You have years of experience. You have a perspective that the younger generation needs. And sometimes you may think, well, you know, I don't have anything to say. These kids and their technology, I don't even know what I could tell them. You have plenty to tell them. You have plenty that you can pass on to that. And anyone that's ever learned something can agree and say, absolutely, there are things that I have learned from older generations that may apply in a different way than when they learned it, but it applies. It definitely applies. Speak that wisdom. Share the stories of what God has done in your life. Share those things. Share the blessings that God has blessed you with. Share the struggles that you've had to struggle through, the problems that you've had to work through, the endless ways that God has provided for you. Share those things to others. We need to hear those things, and we won't know them if you don't pass it on, and wisdom dies out with those who die out, and so it needs to be passed on to the next generation. And then to those that are younger, if those that are older are supposed to speak, then those that are younger should what? Listen. Listen, we don't just surround yourself with those of our own generation. In fact, I find it very ironic that here Solomon is telling his children this. And one of those sons, we have to assume, was a young man named Rehoboam, who would become the next king. Rehoboam, of course, grew up. Solomon died. Rehoboam became king. And the first day that he is on the throne, the people of Israel came to him and they said, hey, your father taxed us like crazy because he was trying to build a wall. I mean, because he was trying to build the temple and everything. And he says, we have been taxed and we've been working hard. Can you give us a break from that? And so he went to his father's counselors. Okay, this is like right here. He went to his father's counselors and they said, hey, give them a break. If you give them a break, they will be yours forever. They will love you. They will follow you. It'll be great. And then he went to his peers. And what did they say? They say, yeah, you need to really crack down on them. And so he followed them. He says, oh, you don't even know the half of it. My little finger is going to be bigger than my father's thigh. You just wait till you see what's coming. He said, okay, so they left. And the kingdom split, civil war. I mean, he did not take this advice at all. Solomon is saying here is listen. Listen to your dad and mom, to your grandma and grandpa, to the previous generation or two that are offering advice. Does that mean that we'll always do exactly what they say? Not always. Not always. It doesn't mean that you have to present, because some people panic and they say, I'm just going to present myself no matter how old I am to whoever it is and just tell them how to run my life. No, but we should always be willing to pull up a chair and learn from experience. I hear people say, well, you know, kids just need to make their own mistakes. Well, true. Sometimes you learn a lot from your own mistakes. You know, I've never been shot, but I know that that's a negative thing. You know, I don't need to be shot to learn from my own experience. My brothers can tell me that it's a negative experience. You know, that's fine. You know, I don't need to be run over by a truck to know that that would hurt, right? I mean, that's obviously. And there are some things that we can learn from others. We would be wise to listen. Wisdom is an amazing principle because no matter where you are in life, you have the opportunity to take all of their experience and apply it to your life, and you can use their wisdom now. Isn't that amazing when you think about it? We have that opportunity. Unfortunately, a lot of times it clicks about the time that we're ready to pass on, and then we realize, oh, what was I thinking? But we need to listen. And a wise person will listen. And if there's one person in your life that's older and more experienced than you, then you can still learn wisdom. I think most of us are in that category. We can do that. This is not original with me, but I'll close out with this. I like the way that this is worded. He said, wisdom that comes through the years can be available to those who have little years if they will be all ears and listen to and apply what God has said in His Word. Wisdom that comes through the years is available to those of little years if they'll be all ears. That's exactly what we need to do. The young are in need of the wisdom of the old. They may not realize it, but they're in need of that. And if we will listen to that, those that are younger will listen to the wisdom of the old, we can be wise now. We don't have to wait till we're old. We can be wise now if we'll listen to wisdom. Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, I thank You so much for the wisdom that we see in Your Word. And Lord, as we close out tonight, I just want to thank You for the people that You've placed in my life, the parents and the pastors through the years, and just the counselors and those that have invested their life in me. And I know, Lord, that can be said all through this room, that we all have those in our life that have given us wise counsel. And Lord, I pray that You would help us to be humble and be willing to listen to instruction as it is given, be willing to pay attention to those things, to listen and to give attention, to apply it, to work through it so that we can be wise. Lord, it's humbling sometimes to hear those things. It's humbling whenever we're given a bit of correction or admonishment along the way. But Lord, I pray that our pride would not get in the way of instruction. Lord, help us to be willing sometimes to hear the same thing again, and maybe again and again. But Lord, help us to apply those things and to be used of You. Lord, I just can't imagine the potential in the next generation. And if You tarry the one after that and the one after that, if we can just give them the power of Your Word and to see them grow and to even surpass us and then to surpass them, Lord, that's Your model. And I pray that You would help us that have the opportunity to influence, help us to speak, help us to be bold and to give counsel and instruction and encouragement along the way, and then help us all to be willing to listen as it's given and to correct our life, Lord, as is needed, no matter where we are in life, to be willing to correct and to apply others' experience, and most of all, Your Word, Lord, to our life. And I thank You for this church and for the wisdom that You've placed in here already with the experience of years. And I pray that You would help us collectively, Lord, to be faithful, to pass these things on and to do our part in this community, to stand for You and to encourage those that come through here, Lord. Just help us to be faithful and to serve You in everything that we do, in Jesus' name.